Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, April 13th, 2017. Please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, phone numbers, so you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, April 15th from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Linda writes, "We will continue work on eradication of invasive non-native French broom within the habitats of Quail Hollow Ranch. We have made a lot of progress, and I want to thank all the volunteers who have stepped forward to help this special place and the natural world." She hopes to see you out there. How do you get to Quail Hollow? Well, go up Graham Hill Road out of Santa Cruz. As you come down into Felton, take a right at the first light and go 2 miles up East Ziani Road to Quail Hollow Road. Take a left, and about a half mile up on the right-hand side, you'll find the entrance to the park. Meet in the gravel parking lot at the left side of the entrance road. Once again, that's the Habitat Restoration Team this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. You can contact the leader, Linda. Her email address, redwdrn@packbell.net. That's redwdrn.packbell.net. And a land defender has been murdered in Oaxaca. In this story from the Earth First Newswire, and they got it from It's Going Down. Human rights defender Jose Alberto Toledo Villalobos was attacked on the night of April 8th on the Tepanapec Highway in Oaxaca, where he was found with multiple bruises and contusions on his face and abdomen. According to a statement released by the Assembly of Indigenous Peoples of the Isthmus, Jose Alberto was driving a motorcycle taxi around 8 p.m. when he was intercepted by a vehicle from which several people emerged and beat him, leaving him seriously injured. He was refused treatment at the Tepanatepec Basic Community Hospital and transferred to the Huchitan General Hospital, where he passed away on April 9th at around 11:30 a.m. Alberto Toledo participated as an activist and territory defender against mining and wind energy mega projects and against the high cost of electricity in the communities of Cahuites and the eastern zone of the Isthmus region. He was also part of the formation of indigenous peoples of the Oaxacan Isthmus and belonged to the National Network of Civil Resistance. Lastly, social organizations held the Federal Electricity Commission as well as the federal and Oaxaca state governments responsible for their inability to provide security to human rights defenders, they emphasized. And the Mexican government is standing by in solidarity with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society against illegal poachers. A judge has issued a restraining order. Thanks to a swift response by the Mexican government, a potentially dangerous confrontation by hostile fishermen towards Sea Shepherd was averted on Thursday, March 30th. A temporary restraining order issued against the fishermen on March 28th by the Attorney General's office was ratified by a judge on April 5th. Protesting fishermen, led by one of San Felipe's fishing cooperative leaders, held a demonstration on March 26 where they threatened to burn Sea Shepherd ships if they were still in the Gulf by Thursday, March 30th at 1400 hours. Sea Shepherd is currently in the Gulf, also known as the Sea of Cortez, for Operation Milagro 3 to protect the near-extinct vaquita porpoise and the endangered Totoaba bass. The campaign is in partnership with the government of Mexico. At a demonstration, the fishermen and their leader took a small local fishing boat known as a panga, painted Sea Shepherd's name on it, and burned it in the streets of San Felipe. The act served as a warning that they could do the same to the anti-poaching organization ships, the motor yacht San Simon and the motor vessel Farley Mowat, if they did not exit Mexican waters. The demonstration ended with the leader promising to attack the Sea Shepherd with over 200 pangas on March 30th. When that date arrived, Mexican Navy vessels acted as escorts for the San Simeon and the Farley Mowat in case a clash occurred. Meanwhile, on shore, police screened fishing boats before allowing them to launch into the sea. However, no more than 60 Pangas managed to assemble in the harbor, and none set sail towards Sea Shepherd. No one was hurt on either side, and no property damage occurred. On April 5th, a Mexican judge ratified a restraining order to the fishermen and their group leader, forbidding them to speak, threaten, or harass campaign leader and San Simon Captain Una Leol and the Sea Shepherd crew aboard the San Simon and the Farley Mowat. The fishermen have been ordered not to come near the ships and land base. Sea Shepherd very much appreciated the effective measures taken by the Mexican government to quell what was potentially a very explosive and violent situation, said Captain Paul Watson. Illegal poachers who set the banned gill nets that trap the vaquita, totoba, and other marine animals are angry that Sea Shepherd is working with their government to remove these nets, and they removed 100 in the last few weeks, and to remove the animals caught in them, be they dead or alive. Totoaba bladders can fetch $20,000 a kilo in China, that's about $10,000 a pound, a price that has attracted individuals tied to organized crime and drug smuggling to the trade. This illegal fishing has caused the vaquita numbers to dwindle down to less than 30, leaving the world's tiniest porpoise on the brink of extinction. In March, Sea Shepherd found several dead vaquita floating in the Gulf. The poachers' animosity towards Sea Shepherd is further intensified because the Conservation Society uses drones to locate the illegal fishermen and promptly notifies the Mexican authorities of their coordinates, which has led to arrests. Sea Shepherd is not in the area to oppose legal fishing activities, said Captain Loyal. Sea Shepherd's actions are focused on illegal fishing, and the only fishermen who have any reason to be angry with Sea Shepherd are those whose illegal activities are being disrupted and shut down by Sea Shepherd crews. And in Italy, thousands of minks have been freed from a fur farm by the Animal Liberation Front in this story found in Bite Back on the Earth First Newswire. Liberation of mink. With the complicity of the night on March 2nd, we opened the cages in all five sheds, emptying the farm in the South Marco Ravina. Part of the farm was empty, and the other females were held for reproduction, an endless cycle of animal production in order to kill them, in the end, for their fur. On a shed we wrote, ALF close. Thousands of minks for the first time felt their feet on the ground and with little jumps departed from that camp to freedom. Eyes in the dark looked on a new horizon full of possibilities. Don't just sit back and watch. Open the cages. Direct action for animal liberation, signed the Animal Liberation Front. And be rattlesnake safe this spring. With the coming of spring and warmer weather conditions, snakes of many species are through hunkering down, making human encounters with these elusive creatures more likely. Although most native snakes are harmless, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife recommends steering clear of the venomous rattlesnake and knowing what to do in the event of a strike. Rattlesnakes are widespread in California and are found in a variety of habitats throughout the state from coast to desert. They may also turn up around homes and yards in brushy areas and under wood piles. Generally, they are not aggressive. Rattlesnakes will likely retreat if given the room and not deliberately provoked or threatened. Most bites occur when a rattlesnake is handled or accidentally touched by someone walking or climbing. On rare occasions, rattlesnake bites have caused severe injury, even death. However, the potential of encountering a rattlesnake should not deter anyone from venturing outdoors. The California Poison Control System notes that the chances of being bitten are small in a risk in comparison to other environmental injuries. Most bites occur between the months of April and October when snakes and humans are most active outdoors, but there are precautions that can and should be taken to lessen the chances of being bitten. Rattlesnakes are not confined to rural areas. They have been found in urban areas on riverbanks and lakeside parks and at golf courses. The following safety precautions can be taken to reduce the likelihood of an encounter with a rattlesnake. Be alert. Like all reptiles, rattlesnakes are sensitive to the ambient temperature and will adjust their behavior accordingly. After a cool or cold, dark night, they will attempt to raise their body temperature by basking in the sun in the mid-morning. To prevent overheating during hot days of spring and summer, they will become more active at dawn, dusk, or at night. Wear sturdy boots and loose-fitting long pants. Never go barefoot or wear sandals when walking through brushy wild areas. Startled rattlesnakes may not rattle before striking defensively. Children should not wear flip-flops while playing outdoors in snake country. When hiking, stick to well-used trails. Avoid tall grass, weeds, and heavy underbrush where snakes may hide during the day. Do not step or put your hands where you cannot see. Step on logs or rocks, never over them, and be especially careful when climbing rocks or gathering firewood. Check out stumps or logs before sitting down on them, and shake out sleeping bags before use, and check your boots. Never grab sticks or branches while swimming in lakes or rivers. It might be a rattlesnake swimming by. Be careful when stepping over doorsteps as well. Snakes seem to like to crawl along the edge of buildings where they are protected on one side. Never hike alone. Always have someone with you who can assist in an emergency. Do not handle freshly killed snakes, as they can still bite you and inject venom. Teach children early to respect snakes and to leave them alone. Keep your dog on a leash when hiking in snake country. Dogs are at increased risk of being bitten due to holding their nose to the ground while investigating the outdoors. Speak to your veterinarian about canine rattlesnake vaccines and what to do if your pet is bitten. Rattlesnakes belong to a unique group of venomous snakes known as pit vipers, and the rattlesnake is the only pit viper found in California. Copperheads and water moccasins also belong to this group. However, they are most commonly found in southern, southeastern, and the eastern part of the United States. The term pit refers to special heat sensors located midways between the snake's eye and its nostril. These special thermoreceptors detect differences in temperature, which help the snake pinpoint prey while hunting. And on the west side, the Environmental Protection Information Center is fighting back in court for project remediation. EPIC is back in court to ensure that promised logging remediation will occur. EPIC is seeking to amend our original lawsuit to target some of the unfulfilled promises made by the Forest Service. Broadly speaking, the Westside timber sale consisted of two components, a timber sale and project features to recover the forest post-fire and post-logging. The first part, the logging, has occurred, but the second, the recovery actions may never occur because of the Forest Service's failures. Through the Westside timber sale, the Forest Service has denuded around 6,000 acres of mostly steep and unstable slopes in the Klamath National Forest. In its wake, the Forest Service has left a mess. Slash and logging debris litter the landscape. Roads are collapsing and washing into the Klamath River. Forest fuel conditions are worse than when the project started. In short, this is what EPIC predicted would happen, but no one likes to say, "I told you so." As promised to the public in their environmental impact statement, the Forest Service indicated that it was going to come back in and clean up this mess through fuels reductions projects and treatment of legacy sources of sediment pollution. The Forest Service predicted this remediation work on selling timber for an exaggerated price, $240 per thousand board feet of timber. In reality, the Forest Service sold owl critical habitat for as low as 50 cents per thousand board feet as the market for these fire-killed trees dried up. At that price, a log truck full of trees would cost less than a cup of coffee. When the Forest Service realized the project was no longer economically viable, it should have stopped logging and reevaluated the project, but it didn't. Now the Environmental Protection Information Center is asking the court to force the Forest Service to think critically about what it can feasibly do by revisiting its environmental impact statements. And you can visit their webpage at wildcalifornia.org. And the federal government has halted cyanide traps in Idaho after one harms a child and kills a dog. A 14-year-old boy and his dog were walking last month on a hill near their home in Pocatello, Idaho, when they came across something in the ground that looked like a sprinkler head. But when the boy touched it, it exploded and spewed powder that sickened him and poisoned his dog to death. The object was one of the M44 cyanide traps the U.S. Department of Agriculture has long used to kill predators that threaten livestock. The damage it had done to Canyon Mansfield and his laboratory retriever Casey quickly fueled outrage over the device's use on public lands. On Monday, a controversy led the U.S. Department of Agriculture agency that places the traps Wildlife Services to announce a moratorium on their use in Idaho. In a letter to conservation groups, Jason Sakow, Wildlife Service's Western Regional Director, said the agency had ceased all use of and removed all devices from private, state, and federal land in Idaho. He added that Wildlife Services would provide organizations 30 days' notice before resuming use of the devices in the state. The announcement came 2 weeks after 19 conservation groups filed a petition seeking the cyanide trap's ban in Idaho. The petition said the devices found that Mansfield found was planted on federal land within 1/4 mile of 3 homes, and it noted that Casey wasn't the first dog killed by an M44, and not even the first this year. 2 dogs were killed by a cyanide trap in Wyoming earlier in March, according to news reports and the petition. USDA records also show that the bombs have been unintentionally killed more than 200 feral dogs since 2008, as well as 22 pets and livestock animals since 2013. And Trump's border wall plan hits a snag as a congressman backs the environmental lawsuit. Raul Grijalva of Arizona joins the Center for Biological Diversity in a call for environmental analysis that could delay any construction for years. A U.S. congressman and environmental group have filed the first lawsuit targeting Donald Trump's plan to build a 30-foot wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. The suit brought by Congressman Raul Grijalva of Arizona and the Center for Biological Diversity in the U.S. District Court for Arizona seeks to require the government to undertake a comprehensive environmental impact analysis before beginning construction. Such a review would probably take several years to complete, delaying indefinitely the fulfillment of one of Trump's signature campaign promises. It will take a significant amount of time to thoroughly analyze the impacts of the wall, and that's the point, said Randy Seraglio, a spokesperson for the Center for Biological Diversity. What we learned about the border wall in the last 10 years is that it's hugely expensive, it doesn't work, and it does a tremendous amount of damage, Seraglio said. The people in the United States have a right to know what the damage is going to be, what it's going to cost, and whether it's going to be effective. These are questions the Trump administration is not interested in answering. The lawsuit invokes the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires environmental review of mixed. The Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection, which are named as defendants, declined to comment on pending litigation. Trump began his presidential campaign in June of 2015 with the promise of a border wall to keep out Mexican immigrants who he characterized as criminals and rapists. In the first week of the administration, he signed an executive order calling for Homeland Security to begin immediate construction of the wall. Homeland Security has since begun a bidding process for contractors to build prototypes for the multi-billion-dollar project. Still, a lack of interest from major construction firms and a lack of funding from Congress may mean that the proposal never moves beyond a border wall beauty pageant expected to take place in San Diego this summer. American environmental laws are some of the oldest and strongest in the world, and they should apply to the borderlands just as they do everywhere else, Grijalva, a Democrat, said in a statement. These laws exist to protect the health and well-being of our people, our wildlife, and the places they live. Trump's wall and his fanatical approach to our southern border will do little more than perpetuate human suffering while irrevocably damaging our public lands and the wildlife that depend on them. The Seraglio said the existing border fence had already caused significant environmental damage, including flooding and erosion. In July of 2008, a heavy thunderstorm produced a damaging flash flood at the Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument in Arizona after the border fence prevented water from flowing away naturally. On the same day, border infrastructure was responsible for the deaths of 2 people and $8 million of damage in Nogales, Mexico, when water was trapped on the south side of the border. Expanding construction on the border could exacerbate flooding problems in addition to threatening the survival of species such as jaguars, ocelots, and wolves, Seraglio said. Additional environmental degradation would probably be caused by the construction of new roads and infrastructure to enable construction of the wall in remote wilderness areas. The Department of Homeland Security produced an environmental impact statement about border enforcement programs in 2001. Thursday's suit is not the first time Trump's policies have attracted legal challenges. What's happening now is not driven by rational analysis of border security needs, said Seraglio. It's driven by Donald Trump's ridiculous campaign rhetoric, and that is not a sound basis for public policy. And global warming could thaw far more permafrost than expected, a study has revealed. More than 40% of the world's permafrost, landscape covered in frozen soil, is at risk of thawing even if the world succeeds in limiting global warming to the international goal of 2 degrees Celsius, according to a new study. Currently, permafrost covers about 5.8 million square miles, and scientists found as much as 2.5 million square miles of that could thaw, an area about the twice the size of Alaska, California, and Texas combined, in a 2 degrees Celsius scenario. Thawing would be more limited if warming can be held to 1.5 degrees Celsius, but that would still affect 1.8 million square miles. New research was published recently in the Journal of Nature Climate Change. Permafrost contains vast amounts of carbon in the form of plants that died since the last ice age and have remained frozen rather than decomposing. When permafrost thaws, the long-trapped carbon is released into the atmosphere, propelling future warming. A 2015 study estimated that thawing permafrost could release up to 92 gigatons of carbon. The new study did not estimate the greenhouse gas emissions that would be released from the thawing or how those emissions could then spur greater rates of permafrost in a vicious cycle. Instead, the international team of scientists focused on how warming air temperatures would affect the extent of permafrost thawing. They said their calculations match a much more extensive loss than previously thought. These results alarm because they predict even greater permafrost loss than shown in the global models for the 2-degree warming target, Kevin Schaefer, a researcher at the National Snow and Ice Data Center, wrote in an email to Insight Climate News. Even hitting the global 2-degree C warming target implies major impacts to people and infrastructure in the Arctic. Schaefer was not involved in the study. Roughly 35 million people live in permafrost zones. Collapsing ground under roads and buildings presents serious risks to those communities. The ability to more accurately assess permafrost loss can hopefully feed into a greater understanding of the impact of global warming and potentially inform global warming policy, said study author Eleanor Burke. Burke is a permafrost scientist at the Met office. She conducted this study with colleagues at the University of Exeter, University of Leeds, Stockholm University, and the University of Oslo. And South African court has allowed domestic rhino horn trade. South Africa's constitutional court has overturned the current ban on domestic trade in rhino horn. As a result, the sale of rhino horn will be allowed to resume within the country's borders, but not internationally. The April 5th decision came on an application by the Minister of Environmental Affairs, Edna Molewa, for leave to appeal an order of the High Court of South Africa, Gauteng Division, in November of 2015 that set aside the moratorium on domestic trade in rhino horn at the request of private breeders. Dr. Molewa sought to leave to appeal the High Court's order to the Supreme Court of Appeal, which in May 2016 dismissed the minister's application, giving no reason for its decision. In June of 2016, the minister applied to the Constitutional Court for leave to appeal the order. The Constitutional Court Wednesday dismissed Dr. Malewa's application, clearing the way for immediate resumption of domestic trade in rhino horn. And in Oregon, officials are pushing for wolf hunts and weaker protections despite a minuscule population increase. Oregon's wolf population has increased by only 2 confirmed wolves since the end of 2015, according to the latest annual wolf population estimate released by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Yet despite the modest increase, officials want to relax protections for wolves. The estimated gain, up to 112 wolves over 110 a year ago, represents an increase of 1.81%, a stark contrast from prior years when gains were around 30% annually. The State Wildlife Agency confirmed 11 wolf packs and 8 breeding pairs, a decline from the prior year's count of 12 packs and 11 breeding pairs. The 2016 numbers were cause for significant concern and show that the job of recovery is far from complete, said Amarok Weiss, West Coast wolf organizer with the Center for Biological Diversity. With the population still small and mostly restricted to one corner of the state, Oregon's wolves continue to need protection. As part of a mandatory 5-year review of its wolf management plan, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife released a draft version of the plan containing proposed changes to wolf management. The proposals address different policy issues, including how wolf numbers will be counted, radio collaring of wolves for monitoring purposes, the systems for investigating suspected wolf-caused livestock losses, and what conflict deterrence measures and other requirements must be met before wolves could be killed for chronic livestock depredation. One troubling proposal would retain an existing plan provision allowing private citizens to engage in what the agency terms controlled take of wolves, meaning hunting or trapping of wolves in instances of chronic livestock depredation by wolves, or in instances in which wolves have impacted localized herds of deer or elk. This is despite a 2016 public opinion survey showing that 72% of Oregonians oppose the hunting of wolves. Science tells us that killing wolves harms their social structure and pack stability and actually increases the risk of livestock conflicts, Weiss said. Non-lethal deterrence measures are much more effective and less costly over the long haul. This also coincides with the view of a vast majority of Oregonians who prefer to exist with rather than kill wolves. The Department of Fish and Wildlife in Oregon will present its annual wolf report and wolf plan update proposals at the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission's April 21st meeting in Klamath Falls. The public is invited to testify on the proposed wolf plan there, as well as the May 19th commission meeting, which will be held in Portland. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. as part of Environment Friday programming. You can listen to WNMB 107.1 in North Amherst, Massachusetts on Fridays at 5:30 p.m. KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. Or listen to KGIG or Berkeley 104.9 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 in Berkeley, California. I'm sorry we don't have scheduled times for the Earth First Update. You can go online to the Grateful Dread Public Radio, that's gdprnashville.org, where you can hear the Earth First Update Sundays at 2 a.m. Or you can always go to radioforall.net, that's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous version of the Earth First Update. Once again, that's radio, the number, forall.net. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.